Welcome, everyone, to the Go For It Attracting Girls to Technology panel. I'd like to get started by getting to know our audience a little bit. So if you are from the Northeast, please raise your hand. Okay, so apparently, I got this from the website, 15% of South by Southwest Interactive attendees are from the Northeast. How many people are left-handed? Okay, pretty good number. Up to 15% of the population, I found this out as well, are left-handed. How many people don't have a cell phone and don't have access to the internet? Really? No one? Really? So surprisingly, believe it or not, 15% of U.S. adults don't have a cell phone and don't have access to the internet, mainly older folks. So there's another group that I want to talk about today that shares this 15% statistic that we're kind of building a pattern, and that's women in technology, women in computer science. So less than 15% of females or of computer science majors at the university level are female. So this is kind of this mystical creature that no one's really met before. You know, you kind of know someone who's a female computer science major, maybe. You've heard of her in the mist out there. So a female computer science major is as rare as someone who is left-handed, who doesn't have access to the internet or cell phones, and, you know, a Northeasterner coming down to Texas, basically. So today we're going to talk about this problem of attracting girls to technology and retaining girls in technology. And I'm Claire Richardson. I'm the moderator today, and I work here in Austin at GirlStart. And in a minute, I'll introduce my esteemed colleagues up here who are all doing work on attracting girls to technology. And why is it so important that we bring girls into technology, that we attract women to this design table in technology companies? And there's been a lot of research lately about why women aren't choosing to go into technology and how we can attract them. And one of the most in-depth studies that was done recently was done at Carnegie Mellon, and it resulted in the book Unlocking the Clubhouse, Women in Computing, which I highly recommend. And they start out the book, the authors start out the book by listing a few examples of the impact of the absence of women at the design table in technology companies. So number one that they listed was early voice recognition systems were calibrated to a man's voice. There were only men engineers at that design table. And if a woman was speaking, it would completely ignore her because her voice wasn't deep and low enough. So because I'm a woman, I can't be heard, apparently. Number two is early voice video conferencing systems were, again, calibrated to a male voice. And even if a woman was speaking, it would instead stay focused on a man. So because I'm a woman, now I can't even be seen because a woman wasn't at that design table. And lastly, the first artificial heart valves were sized on a male's heart and were not sized appropriately for a woman's heart. So because I'm a woman, I may not even live. I may not even survive. So I can't be heard. I can't be seen. I can't survive because there was no woman at that design table to put in the perspective of females in the industry. So how do we get qualified, educated women at this design table around the table where they're making all these decisions about technology? And studies have found that it really starts in middle school. So on the elementary level, girls and boys are equal on test scores and on interest in math and science and technology. And in middle school, let's all get into the middle school mindset. Super awkward, right? Puberty is hitting, you know, we have some sort of haircut we'd rather forget now. But, you know, what was your safe haven in middle school? What was your favorite class that you felt smart in and the popular kids couldn't touch you there? And you really just felt smart and confident and you loved going to that class. Was it PE for anyone? That's right. No, really? Was it art maybe for a few? Or was it math and science class or even the computer lab at your middle school where it was just so fun to be in that class and you did your homework before it was even due and you were really friends with the teacher and this was your favorite class. This is your safe haven. And for so many girls on the middle school level, it's not their safe haven. It's not their favorite class. They don't feel confident and they don't like the class. They don't even raise their hand in the class even though they know the answer. And this fear of math and science and this dislike of math and science continues through high school, through college, and through their career. And the panelists on this panel all kind of represent that pipeline where this phobia follows you through that pipeline and affects your choices along the way. But luckily, we can all do something. We've got wonderful panelists up here who are doing programs nationwide to try to attract girls in technology and do programs. So, for example, I work at Girl Start here in Austin, and we do after-school programs and one-day workshops for K through 12 girls to try to get them interested and just get excited and see computers as something that's fun and not scary. And still others who are up here do recruiting and retaining women in degree plans and career paths. And then still others are doing work on software to make it more gender inclusive so that I can be heard and seen by those video conferencing systems. So what is life like for this new set of girls and women who get to be in these amazing programs that we're going to talk about? The middle school girls are probably still pretty awkward and still have a haircut they're going to regret later in life, I promise you. But they get access to the kind of technology we really dreamed about as kids. They get to make websites and build robots and create video games. I mean, I wish I could have done that when I was a kid. And we hear that all the time from adults who are helping out with our programs. And we really need all of you to help these girls come to the table in technology and help them to see themselves as smart and excited about technology. And we didn't have role models when we were starting out in school, especially in the undergraduate level. I was a computer science major at University of Texas, where Dr. Jay Moore is the chair. And you know, you don't have role models and you don't have people helping you out with that first scary programming assignment that everybody else seems to be doing so well on. And we're here to give you some action steps for helping these girls get excited about technology and attract girls to technology. So with me today, I have Jerry Countryman, TechBridge Project Manager, Dr. Jay Moore, UT Computer Science Department Chair, Raymond Rose, MentorNet Director of Programs, today filling in for the founder, Carol Muller, and Abby Tetezer, Technical Staff at IBM Extreme Blue. So I'll let them introduce themselves, but let's get to know our audience for real this time. How many people are educators today? Wonderful. How many are developers, programmers? How many of those developers work in the game industry? Cool, welcome. How many people are hiring managers or work in HR? Awesome. And
that was a big zero.
And how many people work with women? Okay. How many people don't work with a woman? Okay. How many of you have daughters? Wonderful. Okay. Do you guys want to introduce yourselves? Go ahead. Let me pull up our slides.
Hi, I'm Jerry Countryman. Can everybody hear me? Great. So I'm with a program called TechBridge. And in 2000, a science museum in the San Francisco Bay Area called Chabot Space and Science Center developed TechBridge with funding from the National Science Foundation. TechBridge offers free after-school and summer programs for girls focused on hands-on projects, career exploration activities, and academic and career guidance to expand girls' interests in science, technology, and engineering. TechBridge has served over 2,000 girls, primarily in grades 5 through 12. We work with girls in socioeconomically disadvantaged neighborhoods in our community, and we've built a strong network for the girls by providing support with educators, role models, families, and partners in with professional development trainings and publications. And that's what we do in our local community. So that's one piece of it. But we also have found that the need is nationwide. So we have a national dissemination model that we've developed. And just recently, we received a grant from the National Science Foundation to promote the work that we do with role models. We found that role models are a key piece to getting the girls in the pipeline and keeping them there. So we developed Get Involved, Make a Difference, and this is a a role model guide that we have developed that's on our website and here for you to take after the panel, as well as providing role model trainings for people who want to go out and do outreach to girls in their community to tell them about the field that they work in. We also provide summer training, a summer training institute that's held every August at our site in California, where educators who want to have a program like ours in their community can come and get training, receive curriculum, and our lessons learned on how to bring this to their neighborhood. We also work with partners to share curriculum, resources, and our expertise. And I'm excited to be here as part of this panel today to share some of those lessons with you.
Hi, I'm Jay Moore. I'm actually kind of firing on a whole bunch of different issues at once. So I just listed things and I can talk about any of them. I'm the chair of the computer science department at UT Austin. We are one of the top 10 computer science departments in the United States. We're also one of the largest. And that means that we have a disproportionate impact on women and minorities in CS. And I'm very interested in working on that. And there are many initiatives at the department. I brought a whole bunch of these brochures about the department if you want to find out. And our Women in CS Club made a video about CS, but I only brought about 10 of them. So when they're gone, they're gone. I think it's on YouTube. I've told them they should put it on YouTube. I didn't actually check to see if it's up there yet. I'm also, there's a thing called NCWIT, the National Center for Women in IT, and I'm the co-chair of the club within that group of university departments, the so-called Academic Alliance. And we meet twice a year and work on problems and provide resources to people who are trying to encourage more women in IT. I'm also a member of the board of the Computing Research Association, the CRA, which has a branch called CRAW, which is an organization for women in CS. And I also, for example, chair the committee that every year hands out the Haberman Award, which is an award for encouraging diversity in CS. And so I work on the issue that way. And then finally, I'm a member of the National Academy of Engineering, which has ongoing programs to try to encourage the academy itself to bring more women in. And there are various structures to do that, and I can tell you about that. Anyway, and I've run out of business cards. I'm sorry. My email address, for those of you who might, you might write it down and then scratch it off if I don't say anything you want to follow up on. But it's more, M-O-O-R-E, at utexas.edu. Thanks.
I'm Ray Rose. I'm the director of programs for Mentornet, and as Claire mentioned, I'm filling in for Carol Mueller, the founder and CEO, who came down with the flu at the end of the week and so couldn't be here. Mentornet is the e-mentoring network for diversity in engineering and science. And we're doing things to help maintain, to retain women and minorities, underrepresented minorities, in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics in that career pipeline. And so we've got a number of different programs. You can see there are actually five different aspects. The thing that is people know us most for is setting up the infrastructure for doing one-to-one mentoring relationships. So we start off with the students that are in 106 different participating institutions of higher education, and they can fill out a profile, 34-item profile, that helps to describe them. And then we look for, and how many of you are professionals in science, technology, engineering, or math? You all need to pick up one of these cards because I want you all to volunteer to be a mentor in the MentorNet program. And so when somebody volunteers to be a mentor, they fill out a 34-item profile. And through the magic of technology, we do some matching. You're probably familiar with online dating. Well, it's, This is online mentoring. So we do a match. And that sets up what we like to have as an 8-month relationship, mentoring relationship. But we're only asking for 10 or 15 minutes a week in the email connection. Research shows that mentoring is one of the major things that will help to retain women and underrepresented populations in science, technology, engineering, and math. And so our proteges are in the undergraduate, graduate, postdoc areas. We also have a program for early career faculty. But that's the basis. We also have, so we have about 3,000 one-on-one pairs. We have an informal community where there's informal networking. There are 22,000 people there. We do resume database and some other things that you can see up there. But get into some discussion about that.
My name is Abby Teaser. I'm with IBM Extreme Blue. Extreme Blue is a internship program. It's not specific to women. It's a project-based internship that's really cool. You get to work with cool technology. And I say you because I'm so used to giving this pitch to college students. But college students get to come in. They get to work with some of our top scientists, engineers in IBM on cool projects that really actually mean something to the company. They also have a business impact. So it's a cool internship. But where I come into the picture here in recruiting girls in technology is that that's one of our main goals in Extreme Blue is to have a diverse population in our internship. And so our program goes out regularly to diversity conferences such as Society of Women Engineers, the Grace Hopper Conference, the Celebration of Women in Computing, in order to recruit these women in technology. So I'm really at the end of the pipeline. And we also work hard to retain our interns in full-time jobs in IBM. So that's where I come into the picture.
And I'll just talk a little bit more about Girl Start, which I always love to talk about. We're a nonprofit, like I said, here in Austin, Texas. And our mission is empower and educate girls in math, science, and technology. So we cover not only technology, but also the math and sciences. And we've been here for 10 years, and we do a lot of hands-on activities to try to just get that spark going and to get them excited about their classes in school, from just a one-day workshop to after-school programs to summer camps and everything in between. And we've been lucky enough to serve over 15,000 girls in the Austin area over the past 10 years, and we're also working to train teachers all over the state of Texas on gender equality and how they can use technology in the classroom. So it's not just a boring lab in your science class, but you get to use a digital microscope and you get to take pictures with that microscope and things like that. So we are really working on that spark instead of hard skills. So I've got questions for our panelists in the hot seat. And the first one is, what are the common misconceptions that you found about girls in technology and getting them interested?
Well, I'll take it. I'll start off with the girls that we work with in our program in California. We found that girls, when you talk to them about technology, it's not that they're not interested in it. It's the what they think it is that they're not interested in, that it's boring and nerdy and male, and that you already have to be really good at it. And what we found with working with our girls is that they have this altruistic mission. They want to make the world a better place. That's what we hear from them. They want to do something that serves a purpose. And so through our work with hands-on projects that show girls how technology can be used to make the world a better place, we also bring in role models that are key to showing them that using technology and that the jobs that they have are serving a purpose to make the world a better place. One example from our curriculum that we use is we have a curriculum around green technology, and it's where the girls actually build a green dollhouse. So being able to show how technology is being used to save the planet, for example.
and I have a different perspective on this. One of the things that to me is frustrating when I look at resumes of female computer science students or engineers is the fact that very few of them have former internships on their resume. And when you talk to the girls, they're always like, well, I didn't think I was qualified to do that. And oftentimes they are as qualified or more qualified than their male counterparts that just go for it. So I think one of the misconceptions that women have about internships is that they already have to know how to do it. An internship is a learning experience. And I think sometimes they assume that I'm not smart enough or I'm not experienced enough to do this. So one thing I would say to women is that you are, and you're here to gain experience. So
going back to the misconceptions, one of the things we suffer from in computer science, even more broadly than the absence of women, is the absence of interest at all. The workforce is plummeting. There's a recent report by the National Academy called Rising Above the Gathering Storm, which points out how critical this issue is. But so a lot of people aren't going into CS, and these kinds of decisions are made more often by people in the minority. So anytime you have a negative news, it affects people in the minority more than it affects the majority. One of the misconceptions is there are no jobs in CS. And just to show you how, I mean, there's all kinds of data that proves otherwise. And the Bureau of Labor Statistics projections through 2016 show more jobs in CS than we will be training people in the United States over the next 10 years. Another important misconception is that CS doesn't have room for socialization, that a CS job doesn't involve talking to people. It involves just sitting in front of a monitor all day. And anybody who's ever built a large software system knows you spend most of your time talking to people. And finally, and everything the other panelists have said, I think, is really true. And the misconception that computing isn't culturally, doesn't benefit the world, is just one of the craziest ideas I know, because it's redefined everything from how parents communicate to their kids to how kids spend their time to microfinance in Asia. I mean, you can just go down a long list of socially important changes that have been wrought for better or worse on our society by computing, and why we're letting that design be done by such a small minority of our population. I have no, it's just a crazy idea.
And one of the things that I have actually found the most surprising about the misconceptions that our girls have that we work with is that technology careers don't pay very well.
Yeah.
Where does that come from? And a lot of it is their parents may not be very aware of the kind of, salary increase that you get with a technology degree and the average salary from technology companies. And a lot of high schools don't even bring it up, and they're not very aware of the benefits, after you get out of college, the quality of life that you're able to have with a technology career. I think one of our girls came up to me and said, how much could I make? Like 20,000? Is that good? Is that a good number? So I think that there's a lot of education to be done about just what are the benefits and what are the salary benefits
I should add
food
that
on the job.
Just 3 weeks ago, we had a career fair for the entire College of Natural Science. So that includes not just my department, but physics and math and chemistry and all the other sciences. There were 110 companies that visited campus looking for new graduates. 90 of those 110 were looking for CS graduates. Okay, mm-hmm. The salaries being offered to CS graduates last year, the average starting salary for a bachelor's degree from UT Austin was $58,000, and it was the highest of all the sciences. We had two students join industry in December after graduating in December at $85,000. So, I mean, you know, if you're really good, you can be recognized. But in any case, yeah, those misconceptions still exist. People think all the jobs are in India and China, and they don't, and the ones here, you know, don't pay, and that's just wrong.
One of the other problems, though, is what the people in the fields communicate to students as well. There's been some research on what engineers tell young people about being an engineer. And they tell them that engineering is stressful and challenging. Okay. So if you're middle school or high school, you want to find something that's stressful and challenging. You know. They also stress the importance of superior math and science abilities. So the girls come away thinking that engineering is only for people who love both math and science, or they don't really know what engineering is, or they aren't particularly interested, they don't feel that the field is for them. So part of the thing that we need to be focused on as the messages that we communicate to young girls, or that the professionals communicate to young girls, and that fits in with Jerry, you want to make another plug for your book?
Sure. So that's exactly the kinds of things that our role model guide addresses, is this kind of dealing with the misconceptions that are out there. Girls are thinking that technology people who are working are male, nerdy, they work long hours, and they work alone. And so being able to talk about what you do outside of your job, so some things about your personal life, share not only that you have this life outside of work, but that you love what you do. Be able to gush about your job and talk about how much you love it. That really makes an effect on students and girls to hear that. It's important. As well as being able to, I think, share that along the way you persevered. Maybe you had a really hard class when you're in college and you didn't get a great grade, but the things that you did to overcome that challenge, you know, going to study groups, going to see a TA, going to the professor and talking about those types of challenges, because they're going to look at you and think, oh, but she's just really smart or he's just really smart. So being able to share that you had challenges along the way and what you did. So feel free to grab one of these afterwards.
Yeah,
we'll talk more about it.
I'd like to, there's another issue here. And that's the issue of stereotypes. I mean, stereotypes are incredibly powerful in an unconscious way. And let me give you three examples. First, if you could take a bunch of resumes and you change the name on the resume from John to Joan or vice versa, and you have the resume vetted by a hiring committee, even a hiring committee composed entirely of women, with strong statistical regularity, the male version of the resume will be chosen over the female version, even though everything on it is identical except the gender, the apparent gender of the person. Another powerful stereotype is that women can't do math. It has been shown that if you ask a girl what her gender is before a math test, she performs less well than if you ask her that question at the end. And that is now changing the way they do the standardized testing like SATs and GREs, to put all that gender stuff at the end to not set people up for failure at the beginning. And you guys in there who might think, boy, women are really weak that they get screwed up by such a neutral question. Here's one for you. If you remind white men that they don't jump as well as black men, before you ask them to jump, they jump better if they are not thinking about the stereotype than if they are. I mean, it doesn't have anything to do with math. It doesn't have anything to do with gender. It has to do with people. If you think you're in a group that doesn't perform well on a task, you won't.
And there's a lot of research that's been done about stereotype threat and what we can do about it. And one of the things that they've seen with girls and math performance in particular, and also computer science performance, is making them feel like they are a trailblazer, like they are special because they are one of the few girls in this class or in their school, and that they are really blazing a trail and they are a pioneer, and to give them pride in that fact. And they've seen that a lot of women who do persevere through these engineering and computer science programs do really feel like that. They feel like this is something that is going to help women coming behind me, and I am very special for doing this. So imparting that to young women is also very important. Any other thoughts?
Let's do another question.
Okay, cool. So we have this wonderful audience here made up of a very diverse group of people. What can our audience do to help the problem and attract girls to technology?
First off,
a little plug.
A little sign. Plug.
This is a test. Hey, what is he going to say?
Be a mentor. Be a mentor, whether it's online or face to face. You've got the opportunity to talk. If you don't have the time to do that, volunteer to talk in a classroom about your careers. Again, get the book, yeah. Jerry.
And the reason behind doing that, when we surveyed our girls the first year of our program, they were having a great time doing these hands-on projects and loved what they were doing and were engaged. And when we had them do the evaluation, we asked them, so do you see yourself going into a career? And they told us, no, I see myself doing it as a hobby. I just like to do it on the side. I'm not really thinking about a career in it. And we realized that the link to getting them to think about careers were meeting people who had careers in technology. So being able to go out and share what it is that you do, just a taste of it, you know, I mean, it's really hard for a middle school or high school girl to really do your job and understand what it is, but to give them a slight taste of it, but also being able to share that personal story about how you got to where you are.
Developers, think about some of the images that you're portraying when you're building your software, especially your game folks.
Yeah, and I would go further than that, because it's not just the image, but it's also a well-established fact that diverse teams produce better solutions to problems. And this, again, is gender neutral. It's just diversity. If you take a random group of diverse experts versus a particularly chosen group of experts, the diverse group will do better. And so you'll just get a better game, period. Never mind targeting something.
And the other thing to think about from a business perspective, and in IBM, since I work at IBM, we think about the business perspective, is that our customers are women. Our customers are minorities. If they look at us and see only white males, then they're going to be less likely to want to buy our products, and our products are going to be less likely to appeal to them. So we want to mirror our customers. And in order to do that, we have to have a strong commitment to recruiting diversity and to encouraging that diversity coming up through schools in the first place. So that's something you can think about, is your products should mirror your customers.
Yeah. I would also urge all parents to question stereotypes. And if your daughter thinks she might be interested, if you think your daughter might be interested in science and technology, encourage it. Don't do anything to suggest that it's not an option. And if you detect that she's getting discouraged, try and find out why. One of the big things that we don't appreciate as much is that the kids get a lot of messages that we're not in tune with, and we need to talk to them and find out, you know, oh, computing is video games, and I don't play video games, and Johnny plays video games, so he must be better at it than I am, so I don't want to do that. And question that, and go to, I mean, you all have web resources. You can find all kinds of stuff out there to counter these kind of stereotypes if you look. And, you know, if you can't do anything else, write to me.
I would also echo that, to get the word out to parents and to educators to sign girls up for technology programs and classes. They need encouragement. A lot of times girls feel like, I'm not good enough. You need to be good already to enter a class. And we find that one good strategy, because the classes, unless they're girl-only classes, will be male-dominated, is to have girls sign up in pairs, so the girl isn't entering the class as the only girl in a computer programming class over the summer, or a robotics class. It's nice to have a friend, so encourage them to sign up with a friend and let parents know that reason why.
A number of you indicated that you have daughters. I suspect that more of you have boys. Go and spend some time with your children's teachers, especially the science and math teachers. Provide them with some real information about what's going on in science, math, technology, so that they can be better educated, so that they can talk with their students. Because a lot of the guidance doesn't just happen with parents. It happens with those teachers. And if they don't know what's going on in the field, they're not going to be able to communicate that to the students, and they're going to perpetuate the stereotypes.
And yeah. The guidance counselors as well.
Guidance counselors.
Right. Yeah. One of the big issues is that it has also been shown that boys tend to have I hate making these gender generalizations, but I actually think this is true. I've seen it over and over. Boys tend to have an inflated sense of their own competence. And this is communicated to girls early, from the very beginning. But in college, it's commonly the case that if a guy makes a B on a test, he thinks he's God's gift to computer science. And if a girl makes a B, she thinks that she's just not cut out for the work. And so one of the things we tell all our professors is make sure, especially the girls in the class, understand the value of their grade. And if a B was a good grade, tell them that. And I had a girl come to me just the other day. She made a 57 on a homework, and she was devastated and it was in a section graded by one of my TAs, and I didn't know what the median was for that homework assignment in that section. So I asked her, well, what was the median? And she said it was 50. And I just lit up. I said, hey, that's great. You did a 57. That's way above the median. Good job. Now, she knew that 57 was more than the median. What she didn't realize is that I thought that was great, okay? And I needed, I needed to tell her. And parents need to do that when their girls are being challenged. And just, first of all, find out the facts. And then secondly, point out when they're doing well that they are doing well. Even though it should be obvious to them they're doing well, point it out.
So this question kind of piggybacks on that one. How can we retain women once we've gotten them in a technology class or a degree plan or a job? How can we keep our hooks in them?
Should I say it again? Mentors have been shown to be one of the things that makes a difference. And what are you doing about mentoring? And why isn't UT part of MentorNet, by the way?
I'll tell you offline. We used to be.
I know.
Well, one of the things at IBM, we've always found it a challenge to retain women. I mean, there's the whole family issues. So as an employer, you have to make sure to offer flexible working arrangements. But one of the things that came to our attention is the whole mentoring thing. So IBM does have specific mentoring for women. We have women's networks that do mentoring among women. We also have women's inventor groups. So a lot of women don't get into doing inventing, writing patent disclosures and all that, because they're not really approached or they don't think that they can do it. But by starting these groups that are just women inventors, you kind of jumpstart the process. And yes, women can do inventions and women can write patents. So one of the things in a company is to kind of organize, I guess, is the best way to put it, organize the women.
Yeah, I would like to add that Ray is absolutely right that mentoring is critical. And we do mentoring, for example, even on new faculty, even the males. I mean, we mentor everybody that we can. We have a Women in CS club for the girls in our program that's really quite large. We have 70 girls in it. And they do something that's very interesting. They put together a roadshow, and they take it out to Texas high schools, and they try and explain what computer science is to the high school students. And they benefit from that in a curious way, because they learn a lot more about CS when they try and explain what it is and put together a big picture view of it. Because most of us, most of the time, are dealing with our own local specialty or the class that we're in right now. And just asking them to put together the roadshow was important. Another thing we do is we use pair programming very, very commonly. I've encouraged all of the introductory classes to use pair programming. To those of you who teach programming, let me just point out that pair programming, you should look it up on the web, is basically two people sitting at the same keyboard, one typing and one reading, and they take turns. And it's a very, very effective way to learn how to program. And data shows that a pair of people who learn to program that way, when they progress to the next class, even if it's not a pair programming class, both members of the team will do better than people who learn to program by themselves. And the reason goes back to that having to explain yourself, having to explain to your partner what you're doing at this step makes the whole process more, you know, raises your consciousness of it, and you articulate reasons and you figure out things you would have otherwise missed. So pair programming is really good because it gets the girls paired up with somebody so they can kind of build their confidence. I should note one thing. If you assign pairs randomly, that works pretty well. If you let people choose, girls tend to choose programmers that they think are better than they are, so they will learn from them. Boys tend to choose pretty girls, okay? So it's really better to choose randomly.
We hear from our girls after they leave our programs and are in college. They come back to us and they ask us about support, looking for internships, looking how they can mentor. And we share what we've heard from the role models who've gone into the programs, that they should be applying for internships, and we try to make that connection happen. So getting the word out about internships is important. And so, you know, for those of you who are local to Austin, there's Girl Start, so you can share with Girl Start if you have internships and have that network, as well as letting girls know about, you know, other organizations in college, like the Society of Women Engineers, ACMW, which is the women chapter of the Associated Computing and Machinery Group. And being able to have them know that there's, once they leave one pipeline, there's going to be resources in the next pipeline for females. So whether it be at the university level or in industry, there are groups to support. And one thing that I just wanted to add about the mentoring, we've heard kind of anecdotally from our mentors, role models who've been in the program, that when they go into a school or go into a program or host a field trip, that they have this renewed love for what they do by being able to share with others what it is. So it's also good for you. And they always tell us like how enjoyable it is. And, oh, I forgot how much I love my job. And here I got to share about it again.
Yeah, it is really fun. By the way, we also, our department offers a thing called the First Bites Summer Camp for high school girls. We accept applications. We choose 50 girls from all over Texas. They have to make their way to Austin for a week during the summer. But we pay their room and board. We bring in a lot of mentors from industry. IBM is one of our big partners in this. And we show them what computing is all about, everything from medical imaging to cryptography and robots. And, I mean, you name it, we have a little bit of it. There's hands-on labs where they build robots or build chat rooms and other things. So it's really a great week, and we also have a week like that for high school CS teachers, because the changing the teacher's image of what CS is and who can do it is a better long-range investment for us, for our dollar. If I can get 50 teachers back in the high schools preaching my message, I'll do better than if I just convince 50 girls to consider science. But I do both right now because I happen to be able to afford it. To struggle every year. By the way, something you can do to help, if you have money, give it to us.
Give it to us.
So let's open up to questions from the audience. If you can come up to the microphone in the middle so everybody can hear and it can be included on the audio recording.
Hi, I don't want to question the premise, but your basic premise is that it's important and we should do it, and I agree. I think the only piece of evidence, though, that you mentioned was that diversity is good and that you do you get better results that way. So maybe if you could provide more evidence to that and so, sort of more ammunition for people making not just that particular thing, but what other reasons why, if someone were to say, well, why are we putting money into this particular thing?
Okay.
Why is it important? That
the workforce in the United States is, the high-tech workforce in the U.S. is collapsing. If you have a collapsing workforce, it's really obvious you ought to draw on the other half of the population. I mean, we're basically ignoring half of the population and then complaining there are not enough workers.
Yes. I'm sorry. I am a Unix administrator. I have been for about 15 years and I'm only in my 30s. I started in the military. I have 2 points. The first is a lot of people don't think that, well, of course, the military isn't exactly popular right now. But in the military, they don't say, you know, let me see your bachelor's degree. Let me see your resume. They say, here, go fix this. So I had all that experience and was able to go in a career field where stereotypically I joined men that were 20 years older than me and male. So it was difficult. But something I see is important when you talk about retaining women in the workplace is work-life balance. And I've been in companies where this isn't important and where it is important. So what happens is you have your men who, for example, don't have a wife that will work the 12-hour shifts and stay there overnight. And wow, they're a great worker because they put in so many hours. But the woman who works really, really hard but then has to leave at 5 to pick up her kids is not regarded in the same way. And to be able to get companies to see that and to, you know, to encourage people to only work a certain amount of hours, to say to them, go home at 6 o'clock, because that's difficult because, you know, we need more help and such like that. So I don't know if any of you might like to address like the work-life balance and what should be done within companies to retain people.
Well, I couldn't agree more with you about the work-life balance question. I do want to, there is a misconception by many employers that women tend to miss more days of work over their career because of their work-life balance needs. And it turns out to be false. It turns out that statistically, men miss more days of work than women because women are so healthy. Okay. And they're, you know, they're responsible and they do it. And, but anyway, there's a, I forget the name. It's a National Academy study on gender. I don't remember the name of the study. I can find it if somebody wants it. And it has the data in there to support that claim.
I had a question as an educator and as an employer. So I'm often the only, I teach at the Art Institute of Phoenix in their visual and graphics programming course. And I teach a course called Programming for the Artist, which is typically much more well represented in terms of women as artists than the courses I teach in the actual pure programming course, where to date, after 2 years, I've had two. They came in together and they're in my current course. This is my first quarter with them. So it's sort of like, whoa, women. Okay. That's interesting. So I would affirm your pairing idea that people coming as pairs, they seem to have done, they seem to be doing very well, although they do always want to stay together. So I'm very sort of reluctant to force them to break apart because they do sort of work well together and they're in a male-dominated space. But my question is, if I'm the only sort of computer science-ish professional around and I want to give encouragement to these women, but I obviously am not a woman, can you give me any like general guidelines on things I should say, things I shouldn't say, things I should suggest, not suggest? Should I try to pair the women together within that course? Should I, you know what I mean? Like,
I would say, I think it's interesting that you're talking about programming for artists, that one of the things that is also in the Unlocking the Clubhouse book is that they've found that so many women who do actually major in computer science are there because they want to connect some other interest with technology. They want to do art, or they want to save the world, or they want to bring in, you know, music and dance and all of these other things, and showing them how they can really do that as a career, and that your career is not just going to be program, you know, you're making software for somebody, you're making a website for somebody, for some application, and somebody who is not a programmer is going to use it. So I always like to focus on what other interests that you currently have can you bring into computer science and really add value to a company that way.
I would also add that I'm going to say it, don't hit on them. Okay.
Yes. Seriously. Yeah.
It's a problem. And it's been shown that women who have been targets of sexual harassment will leave the field far more frequently than women who have suffered other kinds of discrimination that wasn't sexual harassment. And so, you know, you just have to be really careful that way. Another thing I'd say is it's also known that mentoring is more effective than not mentoring, even if the mentor is of the other gender. So don't be self-conscious about that. You're a guy, they're women, fine. Listen to them, try and help them. That's really what you should do.
And let me just change the don't hit on them to protect them from being hit on.
Yes, that's right.
I mean, that's sort of what you were meant.
Right.
So that would be another piece. And then look at the societies that are out there, women in computing, and help to connect them to societies that are there that would help to support them.
I just have a quick both statement and a question. I was very lucky when I first started getting into technology that I had a really great and really strong support from my male peers as far as enjoying what I do and them loving what I do and it being cool because I was a girl and being into the same thing that they were into. It's very hard to find that in other areas. And I wonder how you go about educating both boys and girls at the same time for them to break that stereotype of technology is a boy thing, and this is what boys do, and girls do these things.
Well, I can talk to what we do for girls. I don't work with boys, and our organization doesn't do that. But for what we do with girls is we don't introduce topics as boy topics or girl topics. We just introduce them as topics and try to have a twist that's going to be appealing to a girl, you know, like the Green Dollhouse Project that has a theme that with middle school girls worked really well. But just having an environment where girls can explore and that's safe, that you don't have to be an expert at it. This is a place to learn and creating that safe environment for them to explore. And that's how we go about creating that spark in a setting where they can have fun and challenge themselves along the way.
I work with the interns that come to our program, and one of the things I find is that when the girls come in, sometimes they're a little reluctant to express their opinion in a group of guys. And so one of the things I do is one-on-one mentoring with them to say, hey, speak up. You had a great idea. So sometimes on the other side, it's important to tell the guys that they need to listen as well, because sometimes they're not as good about listening. And with guys, it's okay. They'll interrupt each other. But women are very reluctant to interrupt when somebody's speaking. So that's one of the things is one-on-one mentoring again with them to kind of make them aware of how they're acting to each other.
You know, teaching guys to listen isn't a bad life skill anyhow.
Yeah.
The other is having a diversity of role models for everybody. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hi, I'm Jean McCann with Education Week, and I actually have two questions for any or all of you. Seems to me that middle school is a little bit late to start. It seems like, you know, girls are often more excited about, or they don't realize that they can't do math and science in grammar school. When they get to middle school, it gets turned off. Even if you try to spark it, for by high school, forget it. If they're not already into it, I can't imagine how you can get them into it. So I wonder if you could speak to that, you know, lower levels. And then just let me ask my second question is, does anyone know of any initiatives in schools of education to prepare computer science high school, middle school teachers for, you know, what they can do? Because I think a one-week session, although it was wonderful in the summer for these teachers, again, it just strikes me as probably not enough of really hammering home the point.
Let me just say that I agree with you. Girls start to lose their interest in math and science around the fifth grade. And if I had been free to design a First Bites program that would really address the root problem, I would have targeted it at that level. But my funding came from the state, and I measured on my ability to recruit more women into CS at the university level. So the people I have to target, and I have a two-year window between grants, and so I've got to target up there just so that I can prove that I had an effective program. And if the state would say, we'll give you the money and we'll see if it's effective 7 years from now. I could do what I need to do. But unfortunately, the measurement doesn't match the problem.
And Girl Start has the same problem, actually. We do programs starting on the first grade level and onward, and a lot of them are just these one-day workshops that's all we can get the parents and daughters to come to. And it's hard because people ask us, how many of those first graders went on to be engineers 12 years later? And we say, we don't know, and maybe not a lot of them. So it's so important to keep touching those girls, keep giving them support throughout the pipeline. You know, we all know that as you continue through the pipeline, girls keep dropping out, and we need to keep giving them that support and that encouragement and keep showing them that it's exciting even as they're moving through elementary school, middle school, high school, and college.
Yeah, with our program, we've started with girls in the fifth grade. So we target the elementary schools, and we have fifth grade programs. And what we're sure to do, what we make sure we do, is we have feeder programs in the middle schools that these girls are going to so that they get it in fifth grade and then they get it in middle school and then feed into the high schools that they're going to. And it's also keeping track and doing that longitudinal study to see where the girls are going. And we're right now in the midst of doing a longitudinal study with all the girls who we've worked with. And it's extremely difficult and expensive to keep track and keep in contact with the girls. But it's important to try to see where they are 7 years later, 8 years later, after you've touched them.
Why middle grades? Middle grades, because that's where schools start differentiating and grouping kids. So you get differentiated instruction happening there. And on ed schools doing things, let's not talk about ed schools right now.
I would like to add that the University of Texas at Austin has a very innovative program called UTeach, which is being reproduced nationally now. UTeach was started in our college by my dean, Marianne Rankin. And the premise of UTeach is that students who are enrolled in math and science courses at the university can graduate in 4 years with a bachelor's degree and do student teaching and have done student teaching and have a teaching certificate, all at the end of 4 years. So the interesting thing is these people come out who are prepared with a bachelor's degree in computing, say, and also a teaching degree. So they have kind of two career choices. The interesting thing about UTeach is the retention rate as teachers. When they go into public school teachers, 75% of them are still teaching after 5 years, which is really a high percentage rate. And it's because the ones who discovered they didn't like teaching learned it during their first 4 years. Mm-hmm. And ExxonMobil endowed a program to reproduce this nationally, and Marianne recently selected a dozen or so schools to try and do it. So that doesn't exactly address the problem, but it does kind of address the implication of what you
were. And UTeach is a good program, but look at the preparation for our elementary teachers. Elementary teachers traditionally get a half semester of science methods, a half semester of math methods, and that's it. And so when you look at that preparation, it's kind of lacking.
But you've told me something that I just, great idea. Thank you. I will go to our ed school and see if there's a way that we can show them who does CS and who can do CS. It's a great idea. I'm sorry I didn't think of it. I learned something. That's good. I wrote it down.
Okay, I think we have time for just one more question with short answers from our panelists.
Yeah, hi. I do think that Mr. Rose mentioned the differentiation of subjects, and I think that is one area that has harmed us. I almost hate to see you say you're focusing on math and science, because art and music and everything else are all part of this picture, and they need to be brought in, and they need to, this is a conference dedicated to web design, interactive. I mean, is that not technical? We have to look at artists as technicians, right? Mm-hmm. And that really almost all work involves acquiring technical skills, practicing those skills, getting good at it. And so it's really changing the way we're thinking about learning. And really, once you get out of school, that's the kind of workplace you go into, where you have to work with other people. You don't work with just one kind of person. You usually, you know, look how the web has grown. It's grown on the skills of graphical artists as well as coders. So, you know, and those teams, I think that's where we will move, because they start learning from each other. And people who say, I'm not that visual, or I'm not, you know, that linear, you know, they start bending a little bit and becoming more flexible and picking up those skills.
That's a great argument to answer the question, why should we focus on trying to attract more women? As you just put it, no matter what job you go into, you're going to be using these kinds of technical skills and trying to convince women that, I mean, if we don't convince women that they can do technical things, they won't be able to do anything, because everything is going to become technical in some sense.
Two quick points. One, I've got a friend, we talk about science, technology, engineering, math, and so we talk about STEM. He advocates that we should be talking about STEAM, science, technology, arts, in there. So that's one. The current high school curriculum is based on a meeting that was held in 1893 that the NEA sponsored. There were 10 white men that put it together, and 10 of 9 of them were college presidents. We are still looking at that curriculum today. Until we do a radical reform of education, we're not going to get to be preparing children to work in the 21st century.
And I'll kind of throw in how Girl Start does its programs. It's not always our mission to try to get a girl to be a computer science major, to major in engineering, but to just get those basic skills that she may be missing out on in her education at her public school. And so we'll do things, like I said, bringing in those other interests, but using the computer as a tool for her to make art, make music, you know, research whales, if that's what she's interested in. Seeing the computer as a tool and something that is very useful for her to get what she wants to do out of life. So any other comments? Okay.
Become a mentor.
Become a mentor. I think that's the theme for today. Thank you very much for coming. We all have brochures up here, and we'd love to talk to you. Thank you.